Open your Bibles over to Genesis 39, if you're not already there, after our scripture reading. We're going to talk about Joseph a little bit, as I mentioned earlier, and looking forward to going through this tonight. It seems like, I'm going the wrong direction, aren't I? Takes a minute here. All right, down, not up. Okay, I got it. Thanks, Bobby. We want to talk about faithful through temptation. And I don't know if you ever have any temptation in your life, but sometimes, especially when you're confronted with the very thing that is the most difficult for you, it is hard in that moment. It is difficult to remain faithful. Because it's difficult at those moments when we're going through the temptation to think about all the good things we should be thinking about at that moment. And then sometimes when you do go through a difficult time and you realize, I'm going to do the right thing here, it makes it even more difficult to know that doing the right thing may actually cost you something very, very pricey to you, something important, something significant. And so tonight, as we go through chapter 39, the phrase that kept going through my head was that a good deed never goes unpunished. Because that's what Joseph goes through in this chapter. Doing the right thing and not receiving some sort of trophy or prize or man of the year award for doing what's right. And Joseph certainly had to deal with this in this chapter as we think about his life and this moment in his life. Joseph ends up here in chapter 39, I would expect, looking back on the time that was talked about last week, when he was the boy in the, multicolored coat, the beautiful coat that his father gave him, the favored son in his favorite coat. I can expect it after he'd been sold off and he went to go be in a strange land and try to establish a new life in this new place, that he thought back a lot about that, don't you? Don't you think he probably went back in his mind and thought about that? Don't we, when we're going through something difficult, think back, man, I remember the good times. Do you do that? You kind of become a little wistful about that, and man, that was good. I remember that. I wish it was that time again instead of this hard time. Joseph might have been thinking about that, but what we do know based on his story and the way he acts is that he didn't live in that time so much that he wasn't able to do in the present what he should be doing. Joseph moved on, and Joseph did the best that he could do dealing with the circumstances he was given. So he goes into Potiphar's home, and what does he do? Joseph falls into a situation there where he becomes a very trusted man. And as was read in verse 6, Potiphar left all that he had in Joseph's charge because with Joseph there, he had no concern about anything but his own food. That's all he had to worry about. Potiphar, a powerful man, a man who was certainly over much, had the large responsibility, probably had quite a prosperous man's home. Certainly he had servants, certainly he had people who worked for him. Probably he had a lot of issues to deal with day in and day out. And because of his important position, he wasn't able to be home as much as he would like to. And so he left Joseph in charge, knowing that, well, with me gone, it'll still turn out okay. And when I come home, I'll have a good place to be when I get home. Joseph had risen beyond his earlier position of simply a simple slave to a man who could be charged with great responsibility and handle that and do a good job. And it says that God blessed Potiphar's home because of Joseph's position in that home. And so Potiphar himself was blessed because of Joseph and his relationship. What we see is that because of Joseph and trust, Joseph plus trust equals outstanding success. He was a great success, and his life was moving forward. I bet his brothers didn't think when they sold him into slavery, hey, we'll send him to another place, but he'll do fine there. I don't think that's what they were thinking, do you? I don't think that the other people in his life at that point were thinking, this is all going to turn out great for Joseph. Being sold into slavery is not one of those banner moments in your life when you think, boy, that was everything went better after I was sold into slavery. And yet Joseph made the best of a situation that he could have been bitter about. He could have harbored in his heart for a long time. What about us? Are we harboring anything? You know, that does affect temptation, and we'll see in Joseph's story that Joseph was able to move on and do what he needs to do. Now, later, it's going to come up, the hurt that came to him, the harm that came from his family would come up, and he hadn't stopped thinking about that. And yet, Joseph wasn't so... He didn't let himself live in a status of victimhood. Joseph doesn't dwell on that. At least from what we read about him, he doesn't. He moves on after being sold into slavery and becomes a good man. He becomes a true success. Certainly Potiphar viewed him that way. And as we read, others... Well, there was at least one other person that was pretty impressed by Joseph in one way or the other, which we'll read about in this chapter. It says, Joseph, at the end of verse 6, was handsome in form and appearance. Good for him. I wish I could relate, but anyway, he was. Joseph plus handsome equals, well, the very next thing that we'll read. Verse 7. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." I don't know how long this was. I don't know how long this took. But apparently it did not take her very long to figure out that Joseph was a good-looking guy. And she, without her husband home, apparently says, "Well, hey, Joseph, you're a good-looking guy. Why don't you lie with me?" Goodness. Can you believe somebody would be so brazen? People still do that today? I think so. Just watch the news, right? This still happens today. People see somebody and they say, "Well, hey, you look nice. Why don't we get together?" Well, wait a minute. You're somebody else's wife. Joseph has a moment here where, having the good fortune of being a handsome man, being put in a position of being a powerful man in the household of a powerful man, put him in a place where he had a temptation come to him that otherwise wouldn't. A good friend of mine who's an elder in the church elsewhere has a son-in-law that he is real proud of. His son-in-law is a great man. His son-in-law is a doctor. He does transplant surgery. And I asked him one day, I said, Glenn, what kind of wisdom have you shared with your son-in-law? He said, "I told him to be very careful because the more prosperous and the more successful you become, the more likely you are to have temptations come your way that you could not imagine today." He said, "I told him that before he married my daughter." And he said, "And I was pretty specific with him, Joe." I said, "I bet you were, Glenn." Point being that there's often times in our life when things aren't going well, and we can't imagine that we would have the good fortune to be somebody that others would look to as an important, successful person. And then it comes. And you've heard the old quotation, haven't you, that success is harder to stand than failure many times for many people. Often when we become successful, it's then that the temptation comes. And certainly this was the case with Joseph, that he became more tempted, that he had something put right in front of him that wouldn't have happened earlier, wouldn't have happened in his father's home. I don't think that would have happened, a boy in a colorful coat. But here he comes into this situation, and now he's become somebody important and successful. And all of a sudden, the temptations start. And I would expect that you could mirror that in your own life, especially of those who have lived a few more years and have a little bit more experience. This is what happens in life. We grow and we learn and we become successful. But temptation does not stop knocking on the door. If anything, it becomes more sincere and earnest and maybe specific as well. Satan knows us, and you better believe that Satan doesn't tempt us with something that wouldn't be a temptation. He always comes at us in a very knowledgeable way. And he tempts us in a way that is going to be something significant for us in our lives. You see, the great accuser, as he's called in the Old Testament, has great knowledge and experience and wisdom. And let me tell you, he's better than we often give him credit for. So when we find ourselves butting heads with temptation over and over again, the only hope we have is, I'll tell you, it's not us. We cannot defeat temptation in our lives. Our only hope is God Himself, because He's the one who's more powerful than the accuser himself. And that's our only hope in these moments. Thankfully, Joseph's story allows us to really talk about this in a very specific way, because he gives us some good examples here of how we should be living and acting. Let's move on to verses 8 and 9. He refused, and he said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you were his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" You see, Joseph plus integrity equals a model of faithfulness. Joseph says a couple of significant things here. And the two places that he looks for, I guess you'd have to say for persistence and for a willingness to continue on in this difficult situation is the trust of man and the trust of his God. He says, listen, my master, he puts great trust in me. And you know, that's not a small thing. And you know what, folks? That is not a small thing. It is not a small thing to have others in this world put trust in us because we ask for it, and then we work to prove ourselves faithful. And that's a significant thing, because I think anybody in here that has had a moment when you've had a slip and when you violated a trust, you know how hard it is to win that back. It is no small thing. It's a tough thing to do. So we would be wise to, as Joseph does here, say, listen, I have somebody who's asked me to be in charge, and he's trusted me, and I'm not going to look on that lightly. But the second thing he says that to us today is of great importance as Christians is that I can't do this thing because this great wickedness would be a sin against God himself. He did not just think about the momentary problems that would be created were he to get in trouble for sinning in this way. He thought about immediately how his God is going to see him after he does this. He realizes that this violation of his relationship with God would have consequences, dire consequences for him. And I've got to believe that that's the only way you could stand to do what Joseph does here. Because not only does he do it once, as we see, but he continues to be a man of integrity. That's tough. That's tough. And I'll tell you the other thing. Our world does not value this integrity the way that it should, does it? Our world doesn't come out and celebrate integrity, do they? Not the way that they should. And yet we value it in others, don't we? When we see a lack of integrity in those that lead us in the government or those who are in charge of a company, when we see a lack of integrity, we're very quick to point that out. But we don't value people who do live with integrity the way that we should. And we need to realize that while it's important for us to do it, we don't need to wait for the trophy at the end of the day. We need to do it because it's the right thing. We need to do it because that's the pattern laid out for us. We need to do it because good men like Joseph show us the benefit of being God's man, even though nobody else may know about it, even though no one else sees. If we continue on, we see a little bit more about Joseph here. Verses 10 through 12. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her or to be with her. But one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand, and he fled and got out of the house. Well, that was wise, wasn't it? That was a wise move there. This is an incredible picture when you stop and realize, here's this man who's saying, no, I'm going to do the right thing. No, I will do the right thing over and over, day after day. I see him by the picture of what we see here, that he won't listen to her. He's avoiding this woman. He's trying to stay away from her any way that he can. He just goes right along doing the right thing. This is steadfastness. That's the best word I can think of. The man would not give in. The man would not quit being what God wanted him to be. That makes Joseph a worthy example. If we stopped right there, and I think there's a lot more worthy about Joseph. But to see that day after day he's tempted by the same thing. Can you relate to that? Can you relate to being tempted day after day by the same things? I can. And I wish that my temptations were some sort of grab bag, a variety of items that, you know, I got different things thrown at me all the time. But it seems like for me that the temptations that come are always the same temptations. It's like Satan's running a rut through the mud in my life, and he just keeps going back over and over and over again. Do you ever feel like that? I wish it wasn't the same stuff. But you know, Joseph is dealing with that. And Joseph, day after day, is getting this same temptation. And it keeps coming back. And she's right there. And finally, she becomes brazen with it. The other thing I wish would happen is, when we said no, it would be great if we got left alone with that temptation, wouldn't it? No, I'm not going to do that. Okay, fine, you don't get that temptation anymore. But that's not what happens. Matter of fact, the more we say no, what does Satan do? Just like this lady here, just like Potiphar's wife, I believe that we become the irresistible prize for Satan when we say no. When we say, I'm not going to do it, he doesn't give up. He just says, I'm going to get that one. I'm going to get that one. I'm going to keep going after that one until I get that one. Doesn't he? Have you found that to be so? I wish that he would quit, but he won't. And we know that God gives us the power and ability to be able to deal with it. But you know, I'm going to tell you right now that any of us in isolation for too long put ourselves in a position where Satan will overpower us. We have to be careful that we don't put ourselves in a position to become bait. You ever watch the Discovery Channel? You ever watch the Discovery Channel? You're watching the lions. I just watched a program the other night. Lions, it was a whole pack of lions take down an elephant. Did you know they could do that? Took down an elephant. Unbelievable. But you're watching and you're seeing, and there's usually a group of something like gazelles or zebra out there. And you see the zebras running around, and what are they doing? What do zebras eat? Grass. So they look down, and they're looking down, and they're eating, and they're, you know, kind of hanging out with their buddy zebras. And you see one zebra go over there and see some particularly good grass over there. So what does he do? He goes over there where that good grass is. He gets separated from the herd. And you're watching. And you can feel it, right? You can feel it ahead of time. You're going, oh, zebra, you better watch out. You've gotten in the wrong spot. You're over there by yourself. And the minute you separate from the herd, what's going to happen? You lose your protection. You lose your warning system. There's no other zebra there to say, hey, look out, everybody run this way. They all bolt and they go that way. And here's this one guy out there by himself. And the lion's smart enough. The lion knows what to do. He'll just wait until he gets close enough and then he'll take him a zebra. Well, let me tell you, the prowling lion, that is our enemy, the devil. And he waits for us to be separated from the herd. Let me tell you right now tonight. Now, I know this is the Sunday night crowd, but I'm going to say it anyway. Don't you let somebody that you love separate from the herd. God puts us in a position where we are able to help protect and provide and defend each other. But when we go it alone, what's going to happen? He's going to take us down because he's good at it. He's skilled in what he does. He's a very capable adversary. And we can only, with protection, handle the difficulties he's going to throw at us. So we need to think about that. We become more irresistible a prize when we are falling under this, when we are trying to do the right thing and we fall under temptation. Continuing on, verses 13 through 18. Oh, this would be a hard part of the story to take if you were Joseph. As soon as she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, I mean, this must have been bewildering to her. What? Here I am, and he ran away from me. She called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came into me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of the house. And then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought among us came into me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house. What did she do? She lied. She absolutely lied, and probably for a couple of reasons. Now, we're not able to actually be in this lady's head. But I have to believe that it was maybe not a great compliment to her that he left his robe behind and took off. It's not what she was shooting for here in this scenario. Joseph, however, became at this point a framed man. Not in a position to defend himself, even though he had absolutely done the right thing. Now, I know that I, as a parent, have told my children many times, listen, if you do the right thing, it's all going to work out. Sometimes I got to confess, I'm lying when I say that. In the sense that I don't mean it's going to work out for now. Sometimes doing the right thing in our world is not going to work out for now. It is going to work out ultimately in eternity. And we know that God can justifiably handle any situation that comes our way. But people don't do very well, do they? People mess up. People make mistakes. People make misjudgments about us, don't they? And sometimes doing the right thing might bring on us even more difficulty for a time. It certainly did for Joseph in his situation. Do you think Joseph ever looked back and said, well, I should have done it. I should have slept with her. Do you think he did that? I don't think so. I think Joseph knew and understood in a concrete way that the fact is, doing what God tells him to do is always going to be the right thing. Even if for a time he has to suffer. Because as we know, Joseph here really has not even any opportunity to defend himself. Joseph wasn't appointed, you know, a lawyer to come and defend him and help him out. He didn't get any of that. He just got sent to prison, as we're going to read about here in a minute. Joseph becomes a framed man, and there's not a thing he can do about it. And I guess the thought here for us is that sometimes as Christians, as God's people in a lost world, when we do the right thing, we're going to pay for it too. And you know what we should do about that? We should do the right thing anyway. We should do it anyway. And we should move on just like Joseph tried to do. Next couple of verses give us the rest of this story, at least for this chapter. Verses 19 and 20. As soon as his master heard the words that his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And we can imagine that, can't we? And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. Joseph ends up in a bad situation. Joseph plus a husband's anger is a loss of a job and a loss of respect and a place with wicked people. He didn't end up in a good situation. He wound up in a bad situation, having to live out the consequences of him doing the right thing. But we don't see in Joseph a man who at this point said, fine, okay, I was the favored guy in my household. I got sold into slavery. My brothers hated me for the visions that God gave me. So then I came here as a slave and I worked really hard to become a trusted man in somebody's house. I didn't sleep with the man's wife, even though she begged me to. I did the right thing and I ended up in prison. I'm just going to quit. I'm just going to become a wicked person because as much good as it does me to be right, I'd just as soon go ahead and be wrong. You ever thought that? You ever thought, man, it's so difficult to be a Christian, I think I'll just give up for a while. I'll just quit because I try to do the right thing and it doesn't turn out right for me. I'm so thankful for Joseph here that he gives me a goal to look at. Joe, don't quit even when it's hard. Joe, don't quit even when it seems like you're getting, you know, thrown down and then kicked in the guts when you're there. Just keep moving. Keep doing the right thing. Pick up the next morning and wake up and say, I'm going to do something good today. And apparently Joseph had a phenomenal ability to do this. I'm so appreciative for God sharing this story with us because I need to hear it. I don't know about you, but I need to hear it. Again, Joseph does something, and it's the way we began. Joseph plus great trust equals outstanding success. Again, verses 21 and 22. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. What a beautiful thing. It says, the keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. I have to believe that Joseph's steadfast spirit, that his willingness to continue and do the right thing, to show great integrity, to be an honest, trustworthy man, affects God's willingness to once again help Joseph succeed and succeed and succeed. I have to believe that, don't you? Why else is this story here? I think God is saying, if you'll be right with me, I'll make you right with everyone else. And isn't that a great, beautiful story? Doesn't that give you hope and encouragement? It does me. Joseph plus a greater vision. Joseph's vision was not stuck in the now. Joseph's vision was a much higher, greater vision. You can't keep a good man down when his vision is so far in the future. Joseph did not allow himself to get stuck in the now, and we shouldn't either. Joseph's faithfulness carried him through because he could see a place that was way down the road. And that's the point for tonight, learning from Joseph. When given an opportunity, don't even consider the consequences in terms of today or the world's view or from the standpoint of success here where we live now. Only consider one thing. And the one thing that I think we need to consider based on the story of Joseph, is this what God would have me to do? If we come up with the right answer to that question, let me tell you, I think we're doing the right thing. We can be confident knowing that even if everybody around me votes me the loser of the year, if God knows the end of the story, then He can safely secure me into a right position with Him. And who else's opinion am I going to evaluate higher than my God's opinion of me? Who else matters? Doing the right thing in God's eyes puts us in a position that allows us to see temptation differently. And I hope this makes sense. Temptation, when viewed from eternity, becomes an opportunity to prove ourselves faithful to a loving Father. Can we think about temptation differently when we view Joseph's story? Temptation wasn't the thing that was going to beat him and whip him and cause him to lose his situation. Temptation allowed him to prove to God how faithful he could be. He looked at his life from the standpoint of heaven. And what a beautiful thing. Can we make improvements in that area of our life? I know I can. I know that for me, a lot of times, I get stuck in the now and I get stuck in the moment and I want things to be different. And I want it to be different when? Right this instant. I want it to change right now. And discouragement and hurt and somebody saying something ugly to me at church, oh boy. You think Satan knows it when that happens? Sure he does. He says, that one over there is weak. I think I'll go ahead and put a temptation in their path. It's easy at that moment to think, why not? Those people are hypocrites. Right? Whatever we happen to say. We put ourselves in a position to be tempted. And God says, look and think about eternity. Think about where you want to be. Think about your relationship with me and let that be the thing that determines the choices that you make. Joseph did that. I'm thankful for him. Thankful for what he did in this story and the way he handled himself. If you're here tonight and you have some need, some difficulty, some temptation that just keeps whipping you, and you just can't get over it, let me tell you, you're probably not using some of the protections and some of the resources that God has put in your way that you can use. The church family, prayer, talking to someone about it, getting some help. You could do that tonight. That's why we come together, isn't it? That's a big part of the reason we're here. Or if you're here and you say tonight, you know, I want to get in a right position with God from now forward, I want to be His child. I want to live with Him forever. And you want to be baptized into Christ. What a great time to do that. To come and to be a new person for Him. Living for us has never worked out very well anyway, has it? I mean, really? So if you're here tonight and you have any need, please come while we stand together and sing.